From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is The Why. I'm Shai Ben-Yaakov.
And I'm Annette John Hall. More than 5,000 inmates are serving life without parole in Pennsylvania's prisons. WHYY's Laura Benshoff says that's a lot of people.
Pennsylvania, as a per capita amount, has more people serving life without parole than any other state.
In Pennsylvania, the only way for those people to be released from prison is to get what's called a commutation. That's when the state agrees to end someone's sentence early, and it's a complicated process.
They have to get mailed the application, then they have to fill it out, and they have to pay a fee. The judge, the district attorney, the superintendent, the victim and the victim's families, their opinions are asked about your case. And then there's a second round of reporting on you. What's your conduct? Did you do any academic courses? Did you do any vocational work? Are you religious? How is your health? It's a 17-step process.
Oh, my gosh. At one time, commutations were much more common. But since the 90s, no governor has commuted more than five people during their term.
Governor Tom Wolf's administration has recognized the need for change. But just getting a commutation hearing is still almost impossible.
Why did the process fall out of favor? The story raises questions about the effect of politics on the criminal justice system and whether a tool designed to give hope is working.
Today on The Why, Pennsylvania's narrow path to freedom.
Last week, Pennsylvania held a public hearing to consider cases up for commutation. Laura fills us in.
So, Laura, what happened in Harrisburg last week?
All rise.
So last week, there was what's called a public hearing for four commutations, and that takes place in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court meeting room, which is this extremely opulent, you know, seat of power type space where the board sits in, you know, ornate armchairs in the front, and then there's a public gallery, and there's big tables where all the lawyers and supporters and people are sitting at the front. Inmates are allowed to call six people to speak on their behalf, and it's a mix. It's a mix of family members who are, you know, pleading for leniency and would like to be reunited with their family members who've been incarcerated for decades often. It may be experts. It may be retired correctional officers who knew the person. All of those people speak on behalf of the inmate, and then there's a victim's advocate who coordinates with the victim or victim's families and asks them if they would like to come speak or if they would send a letter, and then it's read on their behalf.
I have been very torn on how to word this letter. While I was not born yet at the time of Uncle Bill's death in 1968, I did witness the effect of years of hearings and updates that took a toll on my grandmother.
So that perspective is also included. And then the board does an up-down vote, and that's it. And it might not take very long.
Right then and there.
Right then and there.
And it only takes about 15 minutes. Huh?
Some of them did, yeah. This last week, it was 15 or 20 minutes for a lot of these cases.
So tell us about George Trudell's case.
So George Trudell's case came before the Board of Pardons last week. He's from Philadelphia. In 1986, he was involved in a fight in his neighborhood. And during that fight, a friend of his stabbed someone and they both ran. Turned out later that that man died. Under Pennsylvania sentencing law, George was an accomplice. That made him eligible for what's called murder two, second degree homicide, which means you didn't actually commit the homicide, but if you were involved in a felony and someone else commits a homicide, you can also be charged with that.
So that's called felony murder.
Felony murder, exactly. And that can carry a life without parole sentence. And that's what George Trudell received.
What kind of prisoner had he been?
He is one of these people who, during his time in prison, he kind of did everything he could do to rehabilitate himself. He got a degree from Villanova. He had professors from Villanova come speak on his behalf. He's known to have no misconducts in prison. And he's applied before and been denied. So his case came back up. And his sister spoke really tearfully on his behalf.
I'm so proud of him, and I want to be able to take care of him.
So kind of got cut off by Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman.
Huh. I miss him so much.
The board hasn't voted yet, but I think let's take it from here.
Just saying, we think you'll like the outcome here.
Oh.
And then they voted.
Case number 12, George Street out. Miss Grayson.
Yes.
Dr. Williams.
Yes.
Mr. Dubernet.
Yes.
General Shapiro.
Yes.
Governor Fetterman.
Yes.
Application recommended.
And his commutation was approved this time.
So he got out.
He's not out yet.
Okay.
So the last step is the governor's desk. And from what I understand from talking to people who've been released, that initiates between the board approving and the governor signing off on a commutation, there's yet another combing through of people's backstory just to make sure, just to look, to make sure there's no red flags that they missed.
So he's been approved, but still has this final hurdle to clear.
Yes.
Laura, when were commutations more popular?
There used to be many, many more. In the 50s and 60s, there wasn't the same type of sentencing. People could get paroled out after they had demonstrated they'd rehabilitated. And then in the 70s, people like Governor Milton Schaap, he commuted more than 250 people's sentences during the two terms that he served. It seems crazy to think about now, but Greaterford, the prison in Montgomery County that was recently closed, used to have a funk band that would tour. And that was a thing that was possible. That is just
in the 70s.
Right. It's just incomprehensible now.
Wait, they would tour like outside of prison?
Yeah. It was just less of the kind of penal system that we have now.
What was the band called?
Power of Attorney.
Something happened in the 90s that really changed this system. What happened?
What happened was Pennsylvania released a serial killer. This guy named Reginald McFadden, who had gone to prison at 16 for being involved in a murder, he applied for commutation, and he got out in 1994. He is one of these people who, if you look at his case again, you'd be like, why did they let that guy out? But at the time, he had certain things going for him.
Like what?
So in the late 80s, there had been a prison riot at the prison he was at, and he was seen as being cooperative with the guards. He'd also testified against another inmate who had attacked a guard. So he had this record of being cooperative. Governor at the time, Robert Casey, signed his commutation. And for whatever reason, he just seemed to sail through.
And what happened?
Reginald McFadden is now behind bars in New York State under suspicion of kidnapping, rape, and murder.
I mean, he was out for 92 days, and he killed two people.
Oh, my God.
Raped and beat another woman. These are all in New York State. And is believed to have killed another person, but was never charged for that crime. So he basically had a three-month rampage.
So what happened to him?
He was caught again. He's back in prison. He's done interviews from prison where he talks about why he did what he did.
All the acts from beginning to end was intentional, it was deliberate, it was calculated, and above all, what it was pure evil.
But his story really ended up more or less ending the commutation process. There were kind of two levels of fallout. One was political and one had to do with this possibility of rehabilitation and release for people serving life sentences. Politically, one of the members of the board who had voted to free McFadden, Lieutenant Governor Mark Single, he ran for governor later that year, and he was hammered by his Republican opponent, Tom Ridge.
And you better believe that when Mark Single and I contrast our records on crime, you'll see which one of us has been the prosecutor. Personally and politically, I'll match my record on crime against this guy's any day in the week.
Mark Single, bad judgment, too liberal on crime.
And Tom Ridge beat him. It's very hard to change the commutation process. It's a part of the Pennsylvania Constitution. But once Governor Ridge won, he was able to make changes with a lot of public support because this case had been so bad. So instead of needing four votes to commute a sentence or a majority to commute a sentence, suddenly you needed a unanimous decision by this board. And that got through a public referendum, it got through the legislature, and it eventually did become a constitutional amendment. And practically the effect of that was this became a political hot potato. People didn't want to touch a commutation. If they couldn't trust the process that one time, they were not going to risk their political career necessarily to commute someone else's sentence in the future. So basically, since Republican Governor Tom Ridge took office, no governor has commuted more than five life sentences during their tenure in office. And the average has been less than one a year.
So what's been happening under Governor Wolf?
So Governor Wolf, he campaigned as a Democrat. He campaigned as being smarter on crime rather than tough on crime. And his first lieutenant governor, Mike Stack, really made commutations and second chances for people who've been entangled in the criminal justice system part of one of his signature issues.
We have all these people who have criminal records for things that they did a long, long time ago, even though they're changed and they're better people and they're good citizens now.
And there has been more hope infused into the system. Part of that has also come from a woman named Kathleen Brown, who is a nursing professor emerita at Penn, but she sort of started this project to take students and have them work on commutation applications on behalf of people serving life sentences.
It provides hope for the entire institution. They know there is a possibility of them not dying in prison. No one wants to die in prison.
Laura, we're seeing a lot of aspects of the criminal justice system being reexamined. And while there's been this renewed effort to get commutations going under Wolf, the numbers are still really small when compared to the thousands serving life without parole. Why hasn't this process changed more?
It's really, really hard to change how the state does commutations because it's part of the Constitution. So to make it more restrictive in the 90s, it had to get through the legislature, it had to have a referendum. And so undoing that takes a similar amount or a similar wave of public and political support for changing it. And that hasn't happened yet.
And we said there are thousands of people serving life without parole in the state. Of those, I mean, is it at all clear how many deserve to kind of get consideration in this process?
Well, this is the process by which they're reexamined, right? We have a system, a process that is supposed to weigh all of the factors, psychological, you know, criminal history, good behavior. But this is the only way we get to figure that out at this time.
Laura, have you talked to anyone who's had their sentence commuted?
I recently talked to a man named Thurman Barry. Barry had his sentence commuted in 2016. He was one of the very first people under Governor Wolf.
I was blessed, big time. I understand I was blessed. I'm never going to lose sight of that.
You know, his story in a nutshell is he's from Philadelphia. He was convicted of felony murder because he was participating in a robbery and someone else had a gun and shot someone during that robbery. And he served almost 40 years in prison. And he tried many times to get his sentence commuted, you know.
When I went before that board, I could not hold back my emotions. I said, I will either win their approval or I will go back to Greater Port and perish. This was my mindset.
And since getting out, you know, he feels a lot of pressure to be the model person who receives the commutation. He speaks at a lot of events. He has been doing outreach on behalf of the DOC to juvenile lifers. You know, he works as a janitor at a sort of like lab that does air quality management in Philadelphia. And he takes care of family members he hasn't been able to spend time with until the last few years.
So a lot of the people inside of the prison, they did a whole lot of good things to better themselves. The only thing they need now is the opportunity to come out of there and do something for themselves, for the community, for their family. They just need that opportunity.
Laura, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Laura.
Thanks, Shai and Annette.
The Why was produced by me, Shai Ben-Yaakov, along with Annette John-Hall and Alex Stern under the editorial direction of Katie Colinari.
tweet us at AnnetteJH or at ShaiBenyakov.
We'll be back tomorrow.